Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with the Positive Mind. Back here with you after a hiatus. It's WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we're talking about having affairs, relationships, cheating, all that stuff they call it, philandering. Today we're going to talk about that because I have so many people who write me questions about it. And over the course of this short absence from our regular programming, I had a number of requests for different reasons. We're talking about after the affair is discovered. You know, today's show is about when two people have a relationship and one discovers that the other is having a sexual relationship with somebody else. Now, this may affect you or it may affect someone you know. There's a man I know who just found out through genetic research that his mother had had an affair with somebody else. Yeah, he sent out his DNA to get research, and it came out saying that he was a nationality that he didn't think he was. And then when he checked it out, it turned out his mother had had an affair, and he was born of a different father than he thought he was born. In a recent book on sperm wars, they talked about how frequently people are parented by someone other than the person who brings them up as their father. Yes, it happens. The latest statistic is that 40% of women in a marriage have had an affair, a relationship, a sexual relationship with someone else, and 60% of all men in a marriage have had a sexual relationship outside of the marriage. Now, keep in mind, this is only marriage. And these are only legal marriages. In other relationships, gay marriages, people living together, or gay marriages with people living together, where people have slightly looser boundaries, slightly because they're not married, they're not stuck by that mori, there's probably even a greater number of people who have extra relationship instead of extramarital affairs. You know, I mean, they didn't commit, so, you know, it's a little easier. But if you put it all together, 80% of the people out there in relationships will have one spouse or another, 80% of the couples will have one spouse or another involved in what's called an infidelity at some point. Infidel, the person who does the infidelity, right? So the person who has it done to them is what? The fidelity? We don't know. You know, words are very interesting. You go on the internet and you look at extramarital affairs and you'd be surprised, because surviving extramarital affairs, that's one thing. I wrote a book on it. Yep, I co-authored a book many years ago before I knew anything about this. I mean, I knew quite a bit at the time, but about 10 years ago, I co-authored a book with Marsha Wiener, and this was about, it was called Surviving Relationships, Romantic Relationships, and it was about surviving an affair. Back then, I had certain ideas about it. I have many more about it since, because the book attracted a lot of people, and I did a lot more research, and I found out a lot about it. In fact, it's work that I love to do, help couples get through this. But when I was looking on the internet, and I decided I'd do some research to find out, well, you know, what's been learned since? What's new? I put in extramarital relationships, and before I could get to anything which had to do with helping somebody who discovers that they're having, their mate has had an extramarital or an outside relationship, or as they call it in Hollywood, which I like, stepping out. Has your mate stepped out on you? And so your mate is the stepper, and that makes you the steppee, which is the only two words that don't have this kind of pejorative sense, this evil person on the other side, you know, because maybe they're not evil. You know, maybe they're not. Let's figure it out. We got to work with this concept. But when I was searching for surviving relationships, I ran across a bunch of websites that surprised me. There were philanderers.com, a place where people could meet to philander. Yep. Personal ads for married people seeking extramarital affairs. Another one was called Married But Looking. Another was called the Married Date Link. Another was called Meet to Cheat. Cute, huh? Swap Finder. AffairMatch.com. All of these websites, which were helping people find mates for extramarital relationships. Well, I guess it all kind of makes sense. You know, I mean, it surprised me that there was so much stuff out there. I didn't think you had to look that far or get that, but it is difficult. And in every relationship where there is some kind of a trauma related to this, there are three people who are suffering. Three. Probably four sometimes. You know, and the people that suffer are not only the person who is the steppee, the one stepped out on, but the one who did the stepping feels terrible. They feel that there's horrible depression and remorse and stuff like that, or anger. And then there's the person they had the relationship with, which everybody likes to think, well, let's say it's a man discovers his wife is having a relationship with another man. You think of the other man as evil. Well, why is he evil? He was just, you know, he was answering one of these ads in the internet. He was having an affair with a married woman because he wanted to have an affair with a married woman. Because, number one, he either found her so attractive he couldn't resist. Or, number two, he wanted to have a relationship that was safe. He didn't have to have one where he had to make a commitment. So he was doing his thing. She was doing her thing. And then possibly another victim of this is his other relationship. He might have a wife. And then there might be children somewhere along the way for both people, or for all four people, or for, you know, and then there's grandchildren and your grandmother. Probably the whole universe gets affected every time you kiss somebody. But this is Armando Mill with you at The Positive Mind, trying to get you to understand, as I treat this lightly, this incredibly, incredibly traumatic, difficult thing that happens when you've discovered that the person you're related to is having an outside relationship. It's just brutal. It's difficult because there are emotions you come up with, like betrayal, guilt, self-doubt, loss of innocence. Surviving a partner's affair is one of the most difficult experiences a relationship can encounter. The personal sense of betrayal and the emotional roller coaster resulting from discovering your partner's affair shakes the very foundation of your identity. Yet it's possible for a relationship to survive if both partners commit themselves to a bunch of tasks. Now, here are a few tasks to commit yourself to. The committing is, you know, I mean, first of all, you have to figure this out. There's a great opportunity when an affair is discovered. Great opportunity for, let's say it's a woman, a man discovers his wife is having an affair, because instead of just using the other way, we'll try this way so you could turn your head around a little bit. A man discovers his wife is having an affair. Now, this is the most interesting of all relationships, because in the research I was doing for my book that I did about this, 96% of the men who discover their wife is having an affair get divorced. Right? Where only 4% stick around. That's a remarkable statistic. This is very much like, it's very primitive. It's very primitive. You know, in nature, the male, who's the head of the pack, has to keep out the other males. But the reason he has to keep out the other males, the worst thing, especially with lions, you know, a lion has to fight off any of the lion that comes around. What's the worst thing that could happen to the lion? Is that one of his pride, gets impregnated by another male, and then he has to bring up that male. He has to supply food for the male. So nature did it. They made it work that he would keep all other males away. And that's this thing where, you know, you have the alpha male. So what he does is the lion says, I will not let you have sex with anybody else, male jealousy, which is this kind of possessive thing that says, because if you do, I may likely have to bring up the offspring of your other relationship, and I will be using my energy reserves, my genetic energy reserves, to kind of foster a child that's not even going to keep my genes going. So that's why lions kill any other male who comes near their females, and that's why men, I think, are so incredibly, insanely jealous when they discover their women have had an affair or somebody else, you know. Their women is not the expression I mean to use. The woman related to them is having an affair. I mean, they get blind. And yet, when we look at the statistics, we see that so many men are bringing up babies who aren't theirs anyway, because women are having affairs and they are getting pregnant. And the man is bringing up the baby anyway. But this is the great fear of men. Women jealousy is quite different. Why are women jealous? Women are jealous because, and again, in nature, in evolution, in history, among the lions, the female has to fight off other females who want to come in the tribe. Why? Because she's afraid that he will choose the other female as his primary female. You see, he will choose her and want to go off with her, and therefore she won't be able to bring up her babies. So it's a funny thing. Women are jealous different than men are jealous. Men are jealous because they don't want to bring up the offspring of some other man. Women are jealous because they're afraid their man's going to leave and go off with another woman. It's different kind of jealousies. Everybody thinks they're the same. Certainly not the same. But we're taking this and we're applying it to extramarital relationships or extra relationships or extra couple relationships. The words are so confusing. But, you know, you have to do something. You have to look at the opportunity of it. So here you are. Let's say you're a woman having an affair with a man because it's sexually satisfying. It's wonderful. It's a guy at work. And you two get together a couple of times a day, a week. You know, a couple of times a week. And that's all you do. And it makes you smile. And it makes you happy. And you have orgasms. And say goodbye. And that's it. And then, you know, you wink at each other. And it's that kind of a relationship. And it gets discovered. Your husband discovers it. He finds something, an email, a text message, something, right? And then now you have to deal with it. Well, a wonderful opportunity exists here. If you want it out of the marriage, here's your chance. It's so easy to just say, well, I can't help it. I couldn't help it. I'm in love with him. And your husband will dump you. And then, you know, if you do it properly, you'll wind up with some kind of a decent settlement and you'll be able to move on because obviously you weren't that satisfied in the relationship you were in. Otherwise, you wouldn't be stepping out. There was stuff that you couldn't ask for and get. Otherwise, you wouldn't be stepping out. So the opportunity here is you can end your relationship. But what happens very often is you take a look and you say, well, no, that was just some fun I was having. That was just a thing I was doing. I really want to keep my relationship. Now, when you make that decision that you want to keep your relationship and that which you were doing on the outside was nothing you were really that serious about, and that whatever it is, you're willing to stop it, then you make a commitment to make the relationship work. So it's an opportunity. It's also an opportunity for the supposed victim, the person on the other side, to get out of the relationship. They could use it as an excuse. They may have disliked their mate the whole time. They may have disliked their mate. They may have never noticed them. It may be why the mate stepped out at the first place. You know, she said, you know, he's not even paying attention. Maybe you didn't like it. Now you have an excuse to leave. So an extramarital relationship, which I'm calling all relationships of any kind that are couples, even though you're not legally married, I'm just using that for shortcut words. An extramarital affair gives you an opportunity, discovered gives you an opportunity to leave. This is a great thing. You're 40 years old. What are you going to do? Spend the rest of your life with somebody you don't like? Opportunity to leave. Nowadays, 50% of the people are jumping into that opportunity. 50% of the people get divorced nowadays. And it doesn't include the people who couple. This is just marriages. If we included people who couple, it would probably be up to 80%. You know, because making a good relationship last forever and last a long time is very, very, very tough. Very tough. When I hear people say we're celebrating our 80th anniversary. Yes, I met somebody once who was doing that. I do 30th anniversary. So many years together. There's a thing about that, you know. It's not just how good it was. You could be hating each other, but there's something about staying in one place so long. Being in one place for so long. Feeling committed enough to be there. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about surviving an affair. And this is important stuff because everybody has to deal with it. If you don't have to deal with it, your son has to deal with it. Your daughter has to deal with it. Your mother has to deal with it. Your sister has to deal with it. Your brother has to deal with it. Everybody knows somebody who stepped out on somebody else. Do you know somebody who stepped out on somebody else? Of course you do. Now, what do they do when this happens? You either go running to your mother, you go running to your father. A lot of people are afraid to go to their parents because they want to keep the relationship, but they don't want the shame. They don't want the parents to hate your mate. So they won't tell their parents. So let's say you're a woman who discovers your man has stepped out on you. You feel miserable and where am I going to turn? And you don't want to tell your mother because you're afraid that it's really going to be doomed because your mother's going to hate your husband or your mate and that'll never heal. So you keep your mother out of it, right? Now you don't have your mom, you don't have your pop, you have your friends. And your friends are going to give you advice based on their personal needs. If they miss you and they no longer have you to go to the movies with, or their Friday nights when they used to play cards with you and you used to hang around with them, and now that you've got a man, you've got no excess time for them, they're going to tell you, dump the bum. They're going to say, get rid of your husband who did this. You see? It's going to be based on their needs or their own prejudice. If there's somebody who does not in a relationship, they're going to tell you, get rid of the relationship. It is very difficult to get an honest, helpful advice, consolation from a friend. It is very hard. Because a friend's just going to advise, and advice is not what you need. You need something else, and we're going to be talking about what you need and how you should get it, or what's available to you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Very interesting stuff. So trying to deal with it is, as I said, very difficult. Step one, do you want to keep it going? Now, it's a decision. You know, nobody likes to have anybody have the upper hand. When someone gets discovered in a relationship, having an affair, they do three things always. They lie, and they lie. The first lie is, no, it didn't happen. You know, a man comes home, and he's got lipstick on his collar, and the wife says, look, there's lipstick on your collar. And he says, yes, my secretary fell down, and she was falling on the floor, and I dived to catch her, and she brushed her lips against my neck, and that's how I got lipstick on my collar. I could explain the stains on my pants, too. It all happened, you know, I lie. I'll give you an excuse. Now, of course, you know, the mate wants to believe this is true. They don't want to believe you're having a relationship, but they are willing, more than willing, to be a little gullible on this one. So the first lie is, you say it's not true. The second lie is, you say it's only sex, and it's over. Because the second lie is, you must diminish what it is in order to keep what it is so that you don't have to deal with so much. So you say, oh, we only did it once, and it only happened once, and we were walking, we were at this Christmas party, and we were dancing, and then we fell down, and before I looked, I was inside her, and that's how I wound up having sex. You know, and then once we started, and they diminish it, and they turn it into a sexual thing only. But no, you know, extra outside things are more than just sexual. There's very few things in life that are purely sexual. Maybe masturbation might be, but very few things are. There's usually some emotional component to it. And the third thing is, the third lie is it'll never happen again. How does anybody know it'll never happen again? If you're somebody who gets caught, you know that you did it. And you probably did it more than the one time you got caught. And you say, how can you guarantee it'll never happen again? Well, a lot of men who get caught and women who get caught swear they will never do it again, but they can't swear. You know? So those are the three lies. The three lies are, no, it's not happening. Two, it's really meaningless. And three, it'll never happen again. Those are the three things that almost always happen at the beginning, at the first discovery. Now, I want to say something else about this. The most powerful relationships I've ever seen in my life go on what I call the double shoulder theory. This is a Wall Street theory. There are peaks and valleys in every relationship, and all trauma results in some kind of a valley. And then all highs result in a peak. If you consider the high some kind of a shoulder and the low some kind of a valley, if you hit two lows in a relationship, you know, if you hit a low, and a low would be discovering your mate's having an affair, another low would be some tragedy in your family like the loss of a child or something like that. If you get through two traumas, you either break up on the second trauma, or what you go to is a level of relationship that is so superior, so fine, so wonderful, so great, that it's incomparable. So double shoulder theory is when you have two peaks or two valleys, when you have two bottoms that you hit, and this being one of them, if you get through it, the long-term, absolute relationship with someone with whom you have survived trauma is far superior than the relationship that is based on some kind of innocence and blindness and deception. It's just so much bigger. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So what I want to... What we're going to talk about is what happens when you're trying to get through this. Now, the very beginning thing that happens is you confront a partner. Now, what we've learned is that your mind has this incredible thing that goes on. Let's talk about innocence. A lot of people, when they get married or they're part of a couple, they create a fantasy about how great the relationship is, that is often unrelated to the reality of who the other person is. So you might create a fantasy about, you know, she really loves me, she adores me, she loves me as much as I love her. Yes, we don't sleep together that often because we're so busy, but she is totally dedicated to me, I'm totally dedicated to her. Yes, we don't talk to each other very much. Yes, we stay home and watch TV. And we don't have many deep discussions, but, you know, you have this kind of innocence. That innocence where a person can live in gaga land, you know, when they're just, oh, I have a wonderful relationship. You almost are, it's like a form of narcissism. It is you having a relationship with you by portraying in the other person things about them that is not necessarily true. You glorify them, you make them better than they are, you make them greater than they are. And this is the way you keep your smile going. And you have this kind of childlike innocence walking around saying, I live in this wonderful world. It's just wonderful. My husband is so wonderful. He's great. Oh, everything is wonderful, right? Now, that innocence that is not based on reality, and it's based on more a form of self love. You're creating something to love, and you're just giving him a name and marrying it and making him anything you want to make him, right? When you discover that he is different than you thought he was, you have what's called a narcissistic wound. You crash your entire image of yourself, which was based on the belief that this relationship was solid, crashes. What is this? It is not like you were a solid person going in saying, I'm a real person and I was betrayed. No, you betrayed your own innocence. See, you got caught. This thing you built is smashed apart. And the reason it is so horrible is because the very image you have of yourself, the very belief you had in yourself as being a lovable being, is shattered. That's tough stuff, friends. Narcissistic wounds account for most of the suicides that I've ever seen, the greatest amount of depression that I've ever seen. I knew a man whose wife stepped out on him, good friend of mine. And she was a dancer, and she used to travel all over the place, and he just loved her like crazy, and the two of them were a great couple. And then one day she calls him up, she's in Argentina, and she says, I met up with my old dance teacher, and I'm moving in with him. He had no idea. This man was totally dedicated. This guy was so in love and trusted, and she was on her way, but you could tell he really wasn't relating to her. They were a long distance relationship where he was in it himself, you know? So when she showed him her true colors, he crashed. This guy became so big. I wound up years later finding him. He was a beach bum in Florida, and he was tending bar. He's an old friend of mine. And he had never gotten over it. He had never gotten over it, you know, because of the narcissistic wound. So one of the things that happen that are not considered very often is that a person who finds out that they've been betrayed, if that's the proper word, has a narcissistic wound. And a narcissistic wound is tantamount to your world being shattered. But even though you feel like a victim, it's not that you're a victim of the other person. You're a victim of your own fantasy. But nobody likes to think that because we want to believe there are ogres out there and we want to believe there are victims. We want to blame the person who stepped out. We want to blame the person they stepped out with. We want to blame the person they stepped out with and the wife of the person they stepped out with because she should have kept a better eye on him so that he didn't go after her. You know what I mean? We want to blame the priest. We want to blame the church. We want to blame everybody. We must blame because we feel such a critical wound inside us, we don't know what to do. So the first thing that you got to do at this point is to say, no blame. Yep, very, very tough. I am not going to make this relationship heal by blaming. Because here's what happens with blame and shame. Blame and shame is a great game that happens at the beginning of all relationships. Blame and shame, all discoveries, blame and shame. Now, let's say he gets discovered, and she blames him. He now acts shame. And now he carries his head low, and he says, I wonder how long this is going to take to get over it. And so he keeps his head in shame, and he keeps saying, I'm sorry, and he keeps apologizing. And everywhere they go, he carries his great remorse. There is a place, I think it's called We Care. Yes, We Care. It's down, I think that's what it's called. It's down south somewhere. We Care is a place for people recovering from broken relationships after discoveries. We Care. When I first heard about it, I thought it was W-E-A-K-H-A-I-R. We Care. You know, like my hair is weak. But it's We Care. And 90% of the men who go to this thing are acting very remorseful. So they're in groups and they have individual meetings and they're hanging their head in shame and they have groups and they talk with each other about the shame they felt. But really, they're just waiting to pass the time till they could get over this trauma because they want to keep what they have going, but they know shame is appropriate. I know we're going to take a break in just a minute, my friends. This is Armand DeMille. When I come back, I'm going to be bringing you more of the recovery process. I tell you, if you could take the truth it's really a wonderful thing. I've been studying this for a long, long time, and I find it tremendously helpful information. So I'll be back with you in just a minute. And we're back with you, talking about relationships, and we're talking about the discovery of affairs. You know, there are many questions that we have. What kind of people have affairs? The assumption is that only bad people have affairs, and only people in bad relationships have affairs, but it's not true. You know, it's not true. Monogamy is something most people say they believe in and want. But every survey ever done on the question shows a high percentage of people think monogamy is important to relationships, that affairs are wrong, but highest majority of people have affairs. So, no one is immune from having affairs, and in one way or another it's going to disrupt your life, so it's good to learn about it, you know, either you or someone you know. What are the things that, why do people have affairs? And here's one question. Usually there are three kinds of forces that are working together. There are forces within an individual that pull them towards affairs. There are forces within the individual that push them towards affairs. And then there are societal factors. I'll talk about those three. The forces within an individual that makes them having an affair is attraction. Simple attraction, sex, companionship, admiration, power. You know, you're walking along, you see somebody, and it's a movie star. And the movie star invites you to bed, and you go, whoa, I got to go to bed with this movie star. No matter who it is, you know, man, woman, because there's something about the power and being associated to power. Novelty. Sometimes you just, you know, Shel Silverstein wrote a great song. It was called, After You've Been Eating Steak for a Long Time, Beans Taste Fine. And after you've been having champagne and Chivas Regal, you're going to settle for Thunderbird wine. So there's this thing about, I just remembered the whole song. The world is funny and people are strange and man is a creature of constant change. So after you've been eating steak for a long time, beans taste fine. Novelty. We need novelty. You know, our brains need to grow. The human brain, when it gets too static, starts, there's only two ways to go. You either grow or you die. If you lay back and you don't do anything, get ready. You know, your brain cells start dying. Retirement. You know, retirement is get, you know, okay, sign it up. Do not buy a place by the beach and give up your day job and just expect you're going to lay around. Your poor brain's going to turn to mush. Golf does excite it somewhat, you know. I mean, you ever wonder why do people play golf? Well, because they're trying to keep their brains active, because their brains are going to turn to mush if they don't. Not that I wouldn't love to have people living on those golf courses, you know, make some housing for some poor people instead. But, well, that's another story, right? Things that pull people. So curiosity. Novelty is excitement. Excitement, risk or challenge. There is something about the fact that you like to take a risk. You like to be on the edge. That having a relationship and being a little sneaky, it's like, you know, it's like having sex in public. It's like this thing that's just amazing. I know a couple who loves to have sex in public. You know, they're an actual couple. Their latest thing they did, it's great. They went diving in a shark cage. They have these cages that lower you deep in the water, and the sharks sense you when you have meat or you have some kind of food in your cage, and the sharks are bumping their nose against your cage to try to eat the meat and you. These you could do. They're out in Long Island. It's called shark diving, and you get down there to get to the bottom of the water. Well, they had sex while they were down in a shark cage. That's what makes them happy. They are a remarkable couple. Now, I'm not saying this is sane, or I'm not saying it's insane, but it certainly does keep things alive. Curiosity. You know, sometimes you're just curious. You meet somebody, you see he's a Buddhist monk, and you wonder. Or, you know, you see that person is very attractive. You wonder. You're just curious. And curiosity plus opportunity, you know, will make a person very often step out, take advantage of it. It's a way of an enhancing your self-image. You know, you could enhance it. If you're feeling bad and down about yourself, having somebody admire you, love you, worship you, it's a nice thing, especially if you're married and you have somebody who's always reminding of you of how inadequate you are. You know, you're a woman, you're married, and your husband's telling you you didn't do this right, you don't do that right, you don't do this right, and then you meet some guy, and the guy tells you you're the end of the world. I know a woman who's having a relationship with a man, and the man she's having a relationship is, she thinks he's the most incredible guy in the world, and what we got to is no matter what she wants, he gives it to her. He's a masseur. He massages people for a living. That's how she met him. You see? And so what he does is he massages her all the time. He's having a relationship with her, and whatever she needs, he massages. Whatever she feels, he massages the feeling. Now she feels in love with him, because for the first time, but it's really just this dominant, submissive relationship where he is doing everything she wants, and when you have somebody who's doing everything you want, you could very often think that it's love, because you feel good. For the first time in a long time. So that's another reason people have affairs. But we cannot leave out a last one, a thing that pulls people towards affairs, which is falling in love. Yes, you could actually fall in love while you're married. You could meet somebody else and fall in love. It's possible, whatever that means. You know, you could have settled for what you had and then gotten married and then said, well, I'm just going to, this is my lot. This is the, I made my bed. I've got to sleep in it. But you find somebody else and you fall in love. There are forces within the individual that very often push them to have affairs, which is they're in a painful relationship. If you're in a painful relationship, and that's a relationship where you're nasty with each other, you talk to each other, it hurts. There's a desire to escape it. See, different than having things that pull you, this one pushes you. It pushes you out of your inside. You've got to have something that makes you feel good. Another thing it does is, another reason that pushes you is the desire to fill gaps in an existing relationship. Very often you have relationships that are sexless. Fill the gap. You know, you fill it with something else. Sometimes you have one that has no dancing and you love to dance. You go have a relationship with somebody else so you could dance. I know many people who do that. Desire to punish your partner is another thing that is a motivation for having a relationship with someone else. That in a way you feel like it's revenge. You know, you're angry at your partner, but you don't know how to deal with your anger. Your partner picks on you all the time. They're nasty towards you. They show you disrespect. And the way you get even with them, if you have a relationship with somebody else. And I know men who actually think and they actually talk their relationships' names, their wives' names. You know, they talk about it while they're having sex with somebody else. Another thing that could drive a person to have relationships is a need to prove one's attractiveness or worth. Now, this is different than low self-esteem. One is of the ego. This one is more about your attractiveness. Tell me I'm pretty. Show me I'm pretty. You know, you got a man, you're married to a man, and the man treats you like your chopped liver, you know? And you just, you're there every day, and he doesn't really think too much about you. I don't know why they call that chopped liver. But anyway, they treat you that way. And then, you know, and you finally find somebody, and somebody looks at you, and they just say, wow, you're gorgeous. I love your body. It's so nice to feel attractive. And the desire for attention goes along with that. Everybody needs to feel like they make a difference in this world. You want somebody to pay attention to you. Nobody pays attention to you. You're at home. Your kids don't pay attention to you except when they need something. Your husband barely sees you when he comes home. You go outside the guy who's delivering something, the guy who delivers flowers looks at you and notices you and pays attention to you. You're ripe for the picking. And so is he. You see? Okay. Then there are societal factors about affairs. You know, the affairs are glamorized in movies, soap operas, romance novels, TV shows. Public disclosure of public figures having affairs in headline news we're fascinated and we're titillated by it, and in some way it gives us permission to do it. Hey, if Clinton could do it, you know, that makes me more of a man if I do it. People are bombarded with images of women as sex objects in advertising and marketing campaigns. Over and over, the message to men is that the good life includes a parade of sexy women in their lives. Women inadvertently buy into this image and strive to achieve it. The lack of good sex education and the existence of sexual taboos combine to make it difficult for most partners to talk honestly about sex. They just don't. The bottom line is no one single reason that a person has an affair. There are unusually many reasons. And there are many reasons, and what we got to consider is that we're not going to find one. So, now here's what happens to your poor brain. When you discover that the person is having a relationship, an affair, the thing that happens to you is you get lost. You're in a tizzy. Your world is upside down. The natural thing to do is to ask for complete honesty. Tell me the truth. Now, here's the story. The story is, the more truth the person tells you, the more material you're going to have to obsess about later. So, if they tell you the truth, how did you meet her? How many times? Where did you go? Who did you talk to? Was that the time you told me you were sick? Now, the person who is answering the questions begins to realize soon that they're on trial. It feels like a courtroom. They're in an inquisition. The questions are leading into questions. You're getting deeper and deeper into the mess the more questions you answer. How do you deal with it? That's a question. One of the only things you could do is you got to stop the information exchange at the beginning. Here's where you need professional help. A professional will help you move away and get to the real feelings underneath, as opposed to the details about which you're going to obsess maybe for the rest of your life. The details don't matter. The details are like little landmines. They're like little things that are around. Every little thing that you say becomes something that can be brought back as an explosion later. You know, like you go to the movie. Is this the movie you went to with her? Did you take her to this movie? Were you at this hotel with her? And it just continues and continues. Little wonder why you're trying to regain control in this loss of control in your life. You had lost control. It was gone. And so you're trying very hard to find the answer to what you're doing. You're trying to find out, give me details. Well, one of the mistakes that people make is the insistence on details. The other mistake is about honesty. Honesty is overrated. I'm sorry. I mean to tell you this, friends. I know you're going to hate this. You're going to hate me saying it, but it is overrated. The real thing about honesty is like monogamy. You know, honesty is earned. Honesty is not gotten by threat of punishment. You tell me where you hid that thing that's going to explode later, or I'll whip you and punish you and I'll torture you. And that's what they do in the army. That's what they did at Abu Ghraib. You know, that's what they do. They torture people to tell a truth of some sort that they don't want to tell. Right? Or that may not even be the truth. If you torture somebody long enough, they're going to try to make up a truth. Oh, the troops are amassing around the corner, but you can't see them. They'll tell you anything. And now you, if you're somebody who's trying to punish somebody into giving you a truth, you don't believe them. So now they tell you something and you don't believe it's the truth anyway, because there is no truth. Because no matter what truth you get, you're not going to believe the truth, because you're going to keep pushing for greater and greater or different truth. So the whole idea of trying to demand honesty is a mistake. And what happens with therapists, which is very funny, people go to therapists and the therapist demands at this point, they say, from here on in, we need absolute honesty between the two of you. Well, of course, the person who got caught cheating is saying, yes, that's true from here on in, I'll be absolutely honest. But in their mind, they're saying, no, I'm not going to be honest. You know, I'm not going to tell the absolute truth because I'm going to get nailed with every bit of information, every piece I've got. So it doesn't work that way. It doesn't, absolutely doesn't work that way. The idea of honesty is something that gets earned. If you're a person who has people lying to you everywhere, it means that you punish them for telling you the truth. If your kids lie to you, it's natural for a child to lie to its parent to escape punishment. I mean, that's natural. You did it when you were a kid, right? Where did you go? Where did you do it? Your money? The dog ate the homework. That's what children do. That's the nature of the beast. When you get caught, you lie. So everybody is kind of trained to get out of bad situations by lying. So what looks like the truth and demanding the truth is kind of a silly thing, because anybody who gets caught at anything is not going to tell you the absolute truth. They're going to tell you somewhat of a truth. So the belief or the demand that you have to be completely honest is silly. The way you deal with it, and the real way to deal with it eventually, is you will find that you're going to build your own strength. If you're the person who was stepped out on, if you're the steppee, you're going to learn a way through a number of means to build your strength and your development of yourself and to learn from what just happened to you so that you will become a stronger person. And you will become so strong and so firm inside yourself that you won't be demanding facts and information because you'll feel strong. You will then feel that your relationship is a choice rather than a desperate need. And that's the cure. The cure is, if you are somebody who feels like you've been betrayed, you must build your muscle. You know, if you've got to build your muscle. You just got to get a little stronger, period. Because if you're suffering from that betrayal to a point where you're crumbling, then something was wrong at the beginning. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Building your muscle is not easy, but there are some ways that you could do it. Number one, the way you do it is not to demand information and details. Do away with those because they're going to plague you. They're going to plague your poor mind. So don't allow that to take place, number one. Number two, don't be demanding information. Go to a therapist, get a good counselor, but get a counselor who understands this stuff. I guess it is reasonable to demand that whoever is having the affair ends the affair. That kind of is required. But it is not important to make the other person a bad person. Don't talk badly about the other person. Don't even go in there. Don't get the details. Don't start calling them bad names. Leave them out. It's not their fault. It's a fault in the relationship. A fault, not anyone's fault. A fault. So one of the things you want to do at the beginning is to find a counselor that's a decent counselor. Now, there's a new racket in town, which I could tell you about, which is saving a lot of people who get caught at having affairs. The new racket in town is people who get caught having affairs can say that they have sexual urges that take them outside of the relationship, and these sexual urges are so big, they're out of control. They've always had these sexual urges. So if you married somebody who is very hot sexually, you spent had a long history of sexual relationships, and then you discover that they're having relationships after you're together with them, you may have what is called nowadays a sexual addict. What does a sexual addict mean? Sexual addiction means somebody who needs sex as a way of either calming down or affirming their sense of self, of well-being. So a sexual addict is a person who is compulsively having sex. Now that it is seen as an addiction, you get off the hook. You see, you get off the hook, whereas in the past you would have been booted out. You could say, I'm a sex addict and I'm going to sexual addiction therapy, which is true. They have sexual addiction therapy all over the city. There is therapy specifically in New York and everywhere in the United States, I think in the world, for sexual addiction. It's like Gambling Anonymous. You know, it's sex anonymous. It's like gambler's addiction. It's like shopping addiction. There are a whole number of addictions that are out there that are now being treated as compulsions. And the groups, they have individual treatment and group treatment for this kind of thing. And a person who wants to recover can go through that process, or at least say they're going through that process to get their partner off their back. But the partner usually will go with them, and they will be treated as a couple. Now, the partner can't be one of these people who say, you can't look at me, there's nothing wrong with me. It's not my fault that he's out having a relationship. No, it must be done as a couple. And then on top of that, there are groups. And then I told you in these groups there's some of that deception going on. All the people who got caught are being remorseful, but that's besides the point. And then there's another thing called Al-Anon. Al-Anon's a funny thing. Alcoholics Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous and all these anonymous groups, these 12-step groups, they ask that you do not promote them. They say you must swear with each other that we will never promote this or use it for our own, for your own anything. But you know, the truth is they are great. Al-Anon groups are probably the best support group for any woman who has had a relationship, or any man who's had been discovered that their mate is having a relationship. They are fabulous because, number one, there's no crosstalk. The idea of no crosstalk is, I will say something and I'll say what I feel, but you're not going to comment on it. How does that help you? It gives you a chance to talk about yourself and discover your brothers and sisters who are in the same boat. So let's say you're a drug addict and your mate goes to Al-Anon and deals with drug addicts. It's called Narcanon. You know, it is. And you go to Narcanon and you see all these people who are mates of somebody who has a narcotic addiction. So what you want to do is you want to get into these groups, and these groups are very, very helpful. There's another kind of group called BAN, B-A-N, which is Beyond Affairs Network. They were trying to get going. I don't know how well they'll get going nowadays. But a good therapist, this is key. This is, I mean, I can think of a few people I know, Oriamini Morrison or Stephanie Dombra, me when I used to do psychotherapy, you know, because the whole thing is they're not going to be judgmental. They're going to be there and they're going to work with you and they're not going to take sides and they're going to find a way to help you get through it. And if you don't get through it, you don't get through it. But if you do get through it, it's fantastic. Fantastic, you know. This is Armand DeMille. So the question is, in getting rid of it, I'm sorry. It was a couple who came to me. A couple came to see me, and they came to see me, and a man comes to see me, and he says to me, I had an affair, and my wife found out about it, and I need to get help, Armand. I want to stop. I want to honor my wife. He said, I just stepped out once. He's a beautiful guy. I knew him from some other thing, some other field. So I said to him, so I brought his wife in. His wife and he spoke to me, and he had a relationship with a woman at work. He had seen a woman he was working with, and he was working with her, and they had a couple of drinks, and they had sex a couple of times. So you know what the idea was that emerged? I said, let's bring her in the room. She agreed to it because she hated the fact that the woman had discovered this, that she was now persona non grata, that she was a witch. She agreed. The three of them came to my office, and we had one of the most dramatic, beautiful sessions I ever had as a therapist with anybody. There was weeping, crying, screaming, yelling, but it was not shame-filled. It wasn't that thing. It wasn't the woman just taking lumps. She stood up for herself, and I helped her to. And the result of it, the end result of it, was a very beautiful healing. The woman, of course, the man eventually, I know he's now married, his marriage went, he's now has a baby, and they're having a wonderful time. I ran into him recently, and he said, life is like perfect. They got over those shoulders, you know what I mean? This is Armand DeMille with the Positive Mind. There's a lot more to say about this. There's a lot more to say about it, and I would just love to share so much information because I've worked with so many people. I will do a second episode of this some future time, you know? But totally unrelated to this. I'm not totally unrelated. I'd like to play a song for you. I'd like to play a song about a woman who understood that her man stepped out on her and she loved him anyway. It just happens to be so beautiful. And the other part of it that's so beautiful is that Clifford Brown is playing trumpet in the background. Those of you who are jazz aficionados, I saved my music for the end. So, Michael, I hope you can make as much of this run as it can. Here is Helen Merrill with Clifford Brown. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Stick with me, and here's Helen Merrill with Don't Explain.
Hush now, don't explain, just say you'll remain. I'm glad you're back, don't explain. Explain what is the